Gay people are furious at the research that's coming out this weekend showing that it has been gay kids that they're mutilating by telling them they're trans and advocating sex changes for young kids. They're realizing now what we've been saying all along is that people with gender dysphoria grow out of it in their childhood and end up to be healthy functioning gay people. And it's trans rights business is just sterilizing and hurting gay kids. It's homophobia. That's what it is. It has been all along if you bothered to dissect what they were saying. And now, you guys, here come the lawsuits that you knew were coming, right? Because how can you take a whole population, do this to them based on no medical research, and not expect them to come around and sue you? That is what's happening. Here is a list from Transition Justice. But just one second, let me show you this list and then ask your question, David. They're a legal advocacy group that matches harmed patients with legal counsel so that they can sue. Now, I was not able to, if we could just leave this list up for a second and you can screenshot it later and help me look, I was not able to find very much about these two wrongful death cases at the bottom. Those cases don't seem to be public, even though they seem to be ongoing. So a lot of them we know, right? We know who Chloe Cole is. She's one of the most outspoken detransitioners. But this group says that lawsuits over what's called gender-affirming care, which is just sex changes for kids, they have increased eightfold since the first case in May of 2022. Now, what we're talking about is this. A child says they're transgender. They're given puberty blockers to block their puberty. The CAS report, by the way, lays out very clearly that children were never, they never said, I want puberty blockers because my puberty is scaring me and I think I might want to change genders. The reason we did this was because of a Dutch study where transgender adults said, might have been nice if I hadn't gone through puberty because then I could pass. So it was adults who gave children this idea. Children never said, oh, I'd want to stop puberty. We planted this idea in our heads, collective consciousness. Right. No, we... puberty blockers?
No, the kids don't even know.
I mean,
what
kids,
it is.
They have no idea what puberty... Like, what do they didn't know they're even going to block?
Right. Now, even kids who study their own puberty are surprised by it. Puberty is a live monster that you cannot be prepared for. And of course, no one wants to do it, right? But it's a beautiful process. So then cross-sex hormones, all of this that we're talking about, allowing children to change their name and their gender on forms, and then offered cosmetic surgery, like shave your nose, shave your shoulders to pass, breast removal, penis construction, the like. We're talking about all of that and how we never studied any of it. And the research that we have now shows it does not help. It doesn't help. And also they have pre-existing medical conditions and we don't help them with that at all. So let's take a look because now trans activists are mad as snakes that there is one place that lays this all out in a really well done report called the CAS Review. The trans activists, they want all this research to go away. They say it's transphobic and it will hurt children by delaying what they need, which they call gender affirming care. That's a trick of a word because it's when a boy says that they're a girl, you need to give them medicine to affirm them or surgery to affirm what they think they are. Really, it's conversion. You're telling that kid, right? You're not a boy, you're a girl. Let's convert you into a girl. It is modern day conversion therapy. So I promised you over the weekend that I would read this 230-page CAS review. And that's exactly what I did. I sat my butt down and I read it all
every time I walked by her, I was like, what are you doing? What are you reading? She's like, I'm reading this trans report. I'm like, okay, enjoy your weekend.
You know what though bothers me a lot is that it's not a book, so I don't get credit for it on Goodreads, but it was 230 pages. And I was
I need this. You read it.
Your own custom.
You read it so our audience does not have to.
Okay. Because on my yearly reading challenge, I have like 17 books and I feel like that should say 18. I also read the WPATH file, which were big like that too, and it annoys me because I'm a credit junkie. Go ahead, David.
Why was it my question I was going to ask earlier is like, does this mean we might get LGB back and that's it? Like,
possibly
we'll lose all the additional letters.
Yeah,
I hope so.
So let's go over it a little bit. I have things to share with you that I think that if you don't want to spend a whole weekend reading it, that it would be useful for us to know collectively. It is a very important review of transgender medical care for young people in the UK. One of the most bonkers, crazy bananas takeaway is they don't even have a standard practice for diagnosis of gender dysphoria. So if a kid comes in and even mentions gender in any way, there's not a checklist. There's not a prerequisite for how much time they've felt this way. There's not a prerequisite for how many specialists they've seen. Nothing. So they know nothing. There's no standards of how, and they don't even know how many of them. I'm going to show you this in a second. It will blow your mind. I'm sorry, I'm screaming. They don't even know how many they've put on medications. They don't even know the percentage.
Go ahead. They don't have a procedure for it, and they don't even know how many they've put on the medication. So you come in, you're like a 12, 13 year old girl. You're like, yeah, been playing with a lot of footballs lately. I feel like I want to play with my brothers. And they're like,
let's cut your boobs off and get you some testosterone.
Is that normal procedure? I don't know, but it just sounds like you're kind of a tomboy. Maybe let's just nip that in the bud right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a person that's a detransitioner that I've watched on YouTube, and she said she walked into Planned Parenthood, got a prescription for testosterone that day. Said they didn't even take her back and ask her any questions or anything. They're just like, here you go, here's your prescription. And she went on it thinking it was right. And now she still has a man's voice, and she's like that for the rest of her life, and is just pissed off about it and trying to tell kids not to do
it. How old was she?
12.
12?
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Holy smokes.
Now, not only the voice issue, but anyone with a vagina, a real one, will find this extremely uncomfortable. The WPATH files that were published by journalist Michael Schellenberger showed that when you put a girl on testosterone, it thins the lining of the vagina so much that it gets cracked and it starts to bleed. It's not a period. It feels like a perpetual yeast infection. It's itchy. And you have to use lube all the time. You're basically making it so you constantly feel pain in your vagina. That's terrible. What it does, that's if you put a girl on testosterone. If you put a boy on estrogen, it's a very common side effect to have painful erections. And these doctors know this from only experience because they refuse to do any scientific studying on it. So their patients are coming back and saying, really hurts when I have an erection. And you know what they tell them, because they have no research to help them? They say, try not to have an erection. That's what they're telling young boys. That to me sounds like conversion therapy, doesn't it?
Yeah. Trying to tell a teenage boy not to have an erection. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's like telling somebody not to eat food.
It's cruel. I mean, you can laugh about it, right? But that's cruel to send away a boy.
It is cruel.
And with painful erections that they did not have before.
And you're talking about the physical things, but they're not even talking about like what an instant supply of testosterone is going to do to a girl that's never had testosterone.
Yeah.
It's not something your body's just going to be like, "Oh, this is just a little different." No, that changes everything about the way you think. And I mean,
this is interesting that I had never thought of before. The CAST review says that it takes these young girls and it makes them more sexually aggressive than they may have otherwise been. And so they don't know what their sexuality would have been if they hadn't had this perversion of hormones in them. So you can't say that you didn't change their sexuality. So you may have taken a girl who would have been either heterosexual or a lesbian and completely changed how they now see themselves. But not only that, then they're sterile. So they feel this sort of sexual aggression, but they can't achieve orgasm. So that they're always going to be hyped up and frustrated. And that also to me sounds cruel. I mean, we can make lots of jokes about sexual frustration and sexual aggression, but really that sounds awful.
And it's the rest of their lives. I mean, it's like
I mean, you can sort of, you know, come down from these hormones and you won't be always sexed up like this if you're not on testosterone, but you have done something and this is a formative, these are your formative sexual years where you realize what you're into and what you're not. How would they know themselves if they've done this to themselves during their adolescence? So let's get back to the cast report. I've already given you the juicier tidbits, but I want you to know who it's from. This was a years-long project written by Dr. Hilary Cass. She is a pediatrician who was formerly president of the Royal College of Pediatrics and Child Health. It is very thorough and very child-first. If you read it, you'll see that what she wants to do is throw the politics of trans ideology out into the trash and help every child. She does not want any toxic debate around this. She just wants children to be stronger and healthier, period. She says that those of us who have, she says exactly what those of us who have been studying this have said all along. These are gay children being sterilized and experimented on no solid science. And in many cases, these children have autism, ADHD, anxiety, depression, and low body image. Often they come from single parent households, either from a traumatic event. A lot of them have a single parent because one of their parents died. These are kids that need adults to be strong and principled and tell them that ruining their fertility is not the answer. This is what they need. We've let them down because we've given them the opposite. We let advocates and stakeholders change their mind using social media instead of being the adults in the room. Cass says that most children should not transition. Even just changing their name or their gender in a social transition is not a neutral act. In fact, if a child comes to you and says, I want to be called Stanley now, even though I was Jessica before, if you go along with that, you can fast track them into a pharmaceutical life of constant medication. And so she says that young children should only ever make these changes as a last resort. They should only ever be given these hormones in the context of research, and they should absolutely have informed consent on the consequences, such as memory loss, bone density loss, we've talked about all these, loss of fertility, lower IQ. She correctly points out how the research we do have has been hidden and ignored. Look at this. Although the gender services at the NHS had set up research study to evaluate the use of puberty blockers, it failed to publish the result for 4 years. And even when it had it, the NHS continued to act outside of its own findings. So they know that puberty blockers are bad shit for kids. And they continued, they hid the research and they kept giving them out. This is a common theme throughout the report.
And it's also a common theme throughout the UK. You know, we now know, of course, thanks to the lockdown files, and we also know thanks to the COVID files. So this is, seems to be an ongoing thing. We know that this is harmful, but we're going to continue doing
it
anyway.
But we keep doing it. Yeah. Good point.
It just shows you the power that the pharmaceutical industry has over this world.
Yeah.
I mean, because of the pandemic, because of this, like, it all boils down to them trying to get us on some kind of residual drug about money.
And they couch it culturally, right? So the brilliance of the biopharmaceutical complex is they couch it culturally so that we get into a culture war back and forth.
Yeah.
When they then get to stay out of the argument. The biopharmaceutical complex makes billions of dollars off of these puberty blockers and these,
well,
and, you know.
Lawyers for the trans activists have... emails were leaked in Scotland or in Ireland, I think it was Ireland, where they literally said, don't bring this debate into the public because people will not want to do sex changes for kids or decimate all single sex spaces for women. So let's have this quietly. And they had instructions for how to keep it from the public. Let the public, you know, debate about trans issues in a different way while we get our way furtively. Go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to say, like, you had these people that are just like, they're anti-corporation and anti, you know, consumerism and all this other stuff, yet they're completely on board with not only taking pharmaceuticals, but promoting them and pushing them. It's like they don't even have to pay for marketing at this point.
Well, let's take a look at this, at this next slide, because this shows that not only do they not have any consensus on how to diagnose transgender kids anymore. One of the most problematic things she said is that they don't even know how many they've proceeded to put on what they call pathways or interventions, or that have gone on a hormone pathway. So how many of these transgender kids did we give the drugs? They don't know. The government's giving this out, and they literally don't know how many of them they have put on these harmful medications because there's no database. She says, this seems unacceptable in the digital age. You think? She says that our working assumption based on original data was that it's approximately 20% of those referred to this gender identity. 20% of kids go on a medical pathway. This, you guys, is done on purpose. They want to give these kids these medicines with no culpability and no paper trail. It further says that once these kids turn 17 and they go into the adult system, it's kind of like we kind of lose them. We don't know where they go. We don't follow up. We don't know how they've done. We're not sure. And in fact, the WPATH report showed that a lot of patients, a lot of these doctors who give these children either surgeries or hormones, they see them. They'll run into them in town later in life and they'll say, oh, I met someone. We want to have a baby. We're not sure what we can do now, because they didn't understand at the time that they were messing up their fertility and their chances of ever having a family. One more point I'd like to make. Also, yep. They lose these children because they allow these children to switch their national health number. So when you're a UK resident, you get a national health number that you use in the system for all of your medical care. And a child can say, well, I'm trans now, you know, I'm Stanley. And so Stanley gets a brand new medical number in the NHS, and then they lose him, and they can't track what Stanley's medical record was when they were Julie. It's a mess. That is a mess. Go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to say, you have all of these people that are in favor of all this, like they're citing all of this scientific data that doesn't exist, but the way that they're doing it, it never will. And like you said, that's by design. They'll never have the scientific data if they're not tracking these people every step of the way after their medication or right. after their transition.
Now, people are screaming, trans activists are saying, well, she left out 100 studies that didn't support her conclusion. She didn't. She looked at all of these studies, but she concluded that most of them were low quality for this very reason, is because they don't track kids. The maximum amount of time that any British or American study has ever tracked these kids is about 5 years. And the studies in Denmark and Finland that have tracked these people for long term are not very positive in terms of their life trajectory for living out their lives as a transgender person. So she's right about that. Go ahead.
Can I also point out, like, the tracking, like, we saw how they were tracking adverse effects with the vaccine. You got a drop down and you could only select from certain things. So even that, you don't even know what they're tracking. They might have, like, do you have this, this, or this? And it's like, no, everything's fine. If it's not fine, you're out of the study. Like,
well, what they want to track is, yes, fertility. They want to track bone density. So what she's saying is that children who are given this should only be done so in a research, only for research purposes, and that we need to track them for long term and know what happens to them, because the studies that we do have around, specifically around suicidality, is really interesting, because trans activists say if you don't give these kids what they need, they're going to kill themselves. And in fact, what she shows, I didn't bring a screen for this, but what she shows is that there is a high and increasing number of mental illness in the population in the UK, and that trans kids have an equal risk of suicide to all kids with mental illness. And in fact, that population overlaps. So there is no data that shows that trans kids are more at risk than other mental illness patients. They're the same. And there is data, she doesn't say this, but I'm saying this and I can provide lots of data. There is data that shows that when you do transition somebody, it increases their risk of suicide, and it increases not only their attempts, but their success rate at suicide. Because you think you're a person in their 30s, you've cut up all your body parts, you're addicted to medication in order to keep yourself looking from one way, and you can't ever have an orgasm or a meaningful sexual experience. You can't blame someone for being depressed and wanting to pack it in, right? You shouldn't, but like we don't have. Also, she says we don't support people once they're going through this kind of thing. Also, there's no care for detransitioners, and that all gender clinics should have support for detransitioners and detransitioners on staff. How are those people ever going to get along in an office? Right. Right.
Well, that's Chloe.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Chloe Cole talks about how her parents, she doesn't blame her parents because they were manipulated by the doctors. The doctors you're supposed to trust saying exactly that. Would you rather have a live son or a dead daughter?
Yeah. And like, there's no statistics around that that supports None. This loaded gun threat of suicide. So let's leave that aside. Now, this weekend, an investigation from the Times of London showed that Stonewall, which is the trans advocacy group that in the UK led the charge on medicalizing trans kids, hid research from education facilities, schools, and educators that was very much in line with the CAST report. This is Baroness Ruth Hunt, a current member of the House of Lords. What came out this weekend showed that she took a report that said pretty much everything the CAST report says. We have no medicine on, we have no research on this. This may not be great for kids. We should proceed with caution. And she told schools not to read it. She literally said, this is not best practices. You should put it in the shredder. Think of how many educators did not read this and didn't have the chance to realize that they were being ideologically captured. And she said that medicalization and gender affirmation was the only where to go. Basically, don't look here. And now it's been come to light that she did this. She left Stonewall in 2019, and surprise, she now says she's changed her tune because all of that turned out to be not true. They had no data on that. Now she actually says, this is rich. She says she's worried that lesbians can't be lesbians the way she is, that obviously she's a more masculine version of a lesbian, and she doesn't say she's a man. She says, I worry, you know, that like these young lesbians are being medicalized and told they're a boy. Here are a few quotes from her recently saying, the hard facts simply aren't there to back any of this up, meaning gender transition. Talking to a specialist is not the same as transitioning. Very few young people who access support go on to transition. Well, how does she know that, given how little the NHS knows that? She says, that's what we would expect. That's what successful gender treatment should look like. But she says, as a lesbian herself, I've always been deeply concerned about the internalized homophobia that's going on for young women. That means that they can't be a dyke. They've got to be a boy. I didn't know we could use that word. I guess we use dyke again.
Yeah, I don't think there's a problem with it. Yeah.
No? Okay.
No.
She said, I have this kind of fantasy that little baby lesbians could go to a clinic and say, I want to wear a suit, so I want to be a boy. And they're told, no, you're a lesbian who wears a suit. Meaning, like, it's okay to just be a more masculine woman. Whether you're a lesbian or not, you can perform gender however you want. You shouldn't make other people say what you want them to say about how they perceive you. You shouldn't mutilate your body. Now she says, you know, oh, that's not what I was about. That's not what Stonewall was about. Sorry, I didn't mean it. She acted in bad faith. She was pushing sex changes on children. And the research has long since shown, again, that trans kids more often than not turn out to be non-gender dysphoric gay kids. And she's mutilating them. Now, we've been showing you this research, and here it is in the CAST report. I just took some snippets of it. I'm not going to read it all to you. You can screenshot it. And the CAST report is a free download. So you can, you know, take a screenshot of this or pause it here and look for this stuff yourself. We have long since known that these are just gay kids. That's it. And then after this weekend, now there's a change.org petition to strip Baroness Ruth Hunt of her peerage in the House of Lords, again, because she acted against her own people. And gay people are pissed about it. You could spend hours on Twitter how many gay people are saying, I told you this. This is not the same. Trans is not gay. This is not our group. And you betrayed us.
Get it out of the flag. Can you rip the trans part out of the gay flag now?
I mean, really would like to see that happen. Absolutely. Yeah. Instead of more symbols added to it, fewer, because gay is not a circus. It's not a perversion for people to play with, you know, like gay people fight against the perception that they're perverts. most normal people who want to have a normal life, and this is not helping them.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, we all like can acknowledge how hard they fought to even get LGB. Like that was a, you know, and then when it became a thing, like now it's like all these other things have attached themselves to it instead of starting their own thing. And so a lot of them, like there's been hashtags on X, like remove the T.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people that don't go with the Q, the T, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it'd be nice to just have a nice quiet LGB again.
Yeah. But as pissed as gay people are at Baroness Ruth Hunt, they are applauding Hillary Cass, doctor, pediatrician Hillary Cass. Here's a gay man I follow on Twitter whose initial reaction to the Cass report was that every gay bar should have a statue of Dr. Hillary Cass because she has literally ended gay conversion 2.0. And I think she will be substantially on a global scale. So let's call her the academic Cher because she saved gay people. She's championing their right to exist in a healthy and authentic way. Now, I could go on and on about the Cass report. There's just two more things that I'd like to highlight for you if you're not going to read it. One thing is there is absolutely an increase in girls identifying as trans, and it cannot be explained by just social acceptance. Looking at this, the number of girls suddenly being referred to gender clinics, whereas gender dysphoria, we've talked about, was historically only something that very young boys displayed. And now all of a sudden it's girls. And as we've discussed, many of them have pre-existing family or mental health issues that are not being treated. They go into a gender clinic. It's clear this person is autistic or has other mental health issues. And they're like, we'll fix it with your gender. We'll do that. We know that teenage girls are the most prone to social trends of any other group. I don't think you can argue anything else. We've talked about how when Princess Diana said she was bulimic, it inspired a whole generation, my generation, to be bulimic as teenagers during the Victorian era. Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say you have girls in school that are becoming trans as in groups.
Right.
You know what I mean, it's almost like becoming emos.
Yeah. So I want to show you one more thing that they're doing in groups. I also want to point out not just Princess Diana, but that during the Victorian era, it was considered feminine and appropriate for young women to just faint. That became that had an element of social contagion. They're like, oh, let me just display to you my femininity. That they literally could make themselves do it.
They all did that.
Yes.
Like you remember the movies where they would be like, oh.
Yeah, literally that. Now, the Cass report shows that there is now research that's an overlap with gender dysphoria and young girls who imitate tics, facial tics. So one example, they say, is a functional movement disorder called functional tic-like behavior. It's a classic neurodevelopmental tics that start in childhood and last longer than a year if they then can be diagnosed with Tourette syndrome. And it's usually 70 to 80% happens in boys. In contrast, though, this FTLB is typically found to occur in young females with complex disabling and tic look-alike patterns, usually triggered by exposure to videos on the internet portraying tic-like behaviors on social media. This imitation tic behavior is associated with high levels of depression and anxiety, as if these girls just went to the internet to figure out how can I display that I'm anxious and need attention, came on these videos of how to like have, I'm not going to do it, have a facial tic. Do you want to try it, Clayton? I have no idea. I thought about spending some time watching for this to see if I could learn. Like, oh, if I wanted to pretend, I think that's got to be super offensive to people who have real tics on their face. Like, it's not a toy for a young girl to use to get attention. But if we could just put this screen back up here and let me finish. It says the association between this tic-like behavior and gender diversity described by clinical staff reports that 41% of patients with this functional tic had a gender minority identity. So it's something literally they are acting out. It's very strange. And it's just we've been... Yeah, I think it is. It says they're looking for this on the internet. They're seeking it out.
So they're seeking out what they want to have.
Yes, in the same way, right, that they watch transgender influencers and they say, oh, okay, this is the way to do it. I'm going to do it this way, right? Absolutely. So what does it say to you? Again, it says that this is not a population of children that knows what's best for them. Like, the narrative is that children know. And we should not just give them what they want because they saw it on the internet. We're the adults here. We have to look at the data and do what is best, even if the kids don't like it. I have teenagers. I know I'm never popular with them. And that's just the way it's got to be. And if we don't, we absolutely should face the consequences of not helping our children, like lawsuits or losing your seat in government. In response to all of this, though, the Charity Mermaid says that they will help these kids get hormones outside of the NHS. Mermaid says they're going to set up a hotline. How long until that's going to not be legal anymore or they get sued for acting against currently available research? So I know I've just dropped a lot on you. The cast report was long. I felt like you should see it.
I really hope you enjoyed watching this video. You know, YouTube thinks that you'll actually like this next video right here. It's personalized based on your own viewing habits. So if you watch the video, please leave a comment. Let us know what you think about it. And we will see you next time, everyone.